You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Five novels written by Nancy Mitford between 1930 and 1960 have recently been released in paperback editions by Vintage Books. Among them is Wigs on the Green. Ms. Mitford's long-suppressed satirical send-up of the fascists and Nazis, which she wrote before the onset of World War II. With me now to talk about Nancy Mitford's literary legacy is Zoe Heller, the novelist and journalist who's written a new introduction for The Pursuit of Love, one of the five reissued books and one of Nancy Mitford's most popular books. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you for having me.
How did you wind up being the one to write the introduction for The Pursuit of Love? I don't mean this as anything other than, did you feel some kind of special connection to it?
I have always loved the works of Nancy Mitford. I was about 15 and about to go on holiday to Yugoslavia when my mother handed me The Pursuit of Love and said, you might find this interesting. And 15 is not an age where you're particularly ready to take your mother's literary recommendations, but I took the book and fell in love with it. I possibly started off with the very best of her novels, which is both a good and a bad thing. I started at the top.
Well, there's also Love in the Cold Climate, which many people...
Love in a Cold Climate, yes. I think those are two are the greats. But the reason why it was a fortuitous accident, my English publisher was reissuing the Mitford novels in England and asked me would I like to, and I got to get my pick to choose the one I wanted. So I went for The Pursuit of Love.
Is she still read widely in England?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the statistics on that. She's an interesting novelist because she splits people in very profound ways. From years of recommending her to people, it seems to me that you either love her deeply or you really take agin her.
And why do you think that is?
Well, there are people object to her on it. I think there's, in both cases, whether you love her or hate her, you're responding to her highly distinctive voice. This very bright, light, wickedly funny, but also rather wicked and often quite cruel, cool voice. And you either respond to that and fall in love with it and want to eat up more and more, or you object and find it lacking in sufficient compassion or interest in social justice and so on. And one of the things is she is, in all of her prose, self-announcingly frivolous. I think in her greatest novels, there is a sort of undertow of melancholy and engagement with quite serious subjects, love and death and sex and all those things. But there is this sort of frothy surface.
Well, some people might just call it great wit.
Yes. I think for a woman writing in the mid-century about the lives of the privileged upper classes and in particular the minutiae of their love and sex lives, I think she suffers, as some contemporary women do, from being kind of categorized as chicklet.
Well, do you think I've never heard her described as chicklet.
No, but I think that term is a contemporary one. Mm-hmm. But I think that's sometimes what people mean when
partly because she's also funny.
Right.
And also these books are incredibly autobiographical. Deborah, who was just here, has described the Pursuit of Love as being spot on in describing the family.
Yes, yes. I think Nancy had written three or four novels before she wrote this one. And I say in my introduction that some people come to writing novels with everything intact, with their style and their talent fully formed. It seems to me that Nancy took a bit of shilly-shallying with and experimenting with various things before she hit on this wonderful subject, which was her own childhood.
But it's worth noting that Nancy, who's the oldest of six Mitford sisters, had received very little formal education.
Which I think she always deeply resented.
She was kind of self-taught. They thought that girls should learn how to ride horses and speak French.
Right, and that sports maybe would give them fat calves or muscly calves. I think that was the father. So she didn't have a great deal of formal education, but she was clearly fantastically bright and a great reader. And in the letters, she was a great friend of and correspondent with Evelyn Waugh, and he often teases her for her bad punctuation and grammar. One of the things he said, which I think is interesting and perceptive, he says that one of the charms or the strengths of her writing, her fiction, is that she doesn't recognize the distinction between literary language and girlish chatter. And she herself, you know, often did this sort of slightly self-deprecating thing about, you know, she was the last person to claim high seriousness for herself. And in fact, she titled one of the collections of her miscellaneous writings The Water Beetle, after Hilaire Belloc's The Water Beetle, about, you know, if he ever stopped to think how he did it, he would sink. The idea being that this all kind of came out effortlessly. And I think that is an inaccurate piece of self-deprecation. I think the chances are she worked very hard on the prose, because the prose, when you look at it, is a great triumph of a very unique style. There's very little, when you actually look at the stuff which looks like careless chit-chat of a very funny sort, it is beautifully structured and has fantastic rhythm, and you can't sort of take away things from it without altering the balance.
Well, I wonder if this is to some degree the result of the circumstances of her upbringing. It was only after she made her London debut that she began to understand what she'd been missing. And then she seemed to pursue relationships, friendships with most of the top literary figures. It was almost a self-education process.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of her as being so greedy for, you know, being a sort of greedy autodidact in that way. That may well be the case. I mean, in The Pursuit of Love, the protagonist, the heroine, Linda, is...
Debo wondered whether it was her or whether it was based on her or whether it was based on Nancy.
I imagine it was some sort of amalgam, but I'm sure Debo would know better. What's interesting is that the narrator, Fanny, chastises Linda for not having ever taken a serious interest in the arts, or so that she wastes her days in, you know, the frivolous pursuit of parties and hanging about with feckless young men. And I think, although Fanny is rebuked for being such a prig, I think that was something very felt in Nancy, the idea of the uselessness of, or the waste of, bright young women who weren't educated.
Well, she must have found Fanny an interesting character, because I think she included her in another one of the books, didn't she?
Right. Well, Fanny also narrates Love in a Cold Climate, and she narrates Don't Tell Alfred. Yeah, no, she's a recurring character.
Zoe Heller is here, an important novelist in her own right, also a journalist. And she's written the introduction to The Pursuit of Love, one of five reissues of novels by Nancy Mitford, just out from Vintage, beautifully packaged as well. One of them, as I mentioned earlier, is Wigs on the Green, her third novel, which was kept out of print after it was written in 1935 at the request of Nancy Mitford, because it lampooned Nazis and fascists. Why would that be a problem?
Well, I think she thought when they were asking her if they could reissue it, it was about 1951, and she said this was written at a point when we didn't know about Buchenwald, this is just after the war. She didn't think it would go down very well or be appropriate, to use the American term, to have lots of jolly laughs about British fascists.
Well, there would be another factor, I would think. Other members of her family might be embarrassed, because she's based the book on two main female protagonists, her sisters, Unity and Diana,
right.
Both admired Hitler. Jessica Decca, the another sister, was a communist. Right. So this is a family where I'm sure politics was a major divisive force.
Yes, although it's interesting if you read the collected letters, the politics are obviously a source of conflict, as are sort of ancient nursery conflicts, as I imagine they are in all families, that you find, you know, years on, they're still debating exactly who said what to whom in the nursery, or, you know, about some very minor family squabble.
I'm one of four children. We do that all the time.
As do I. I think in the case of Whigs on the Green, that did cause a very great rift between specifically Diana and Nancy. The Eugenia character, who was the sort of person who becomes obsessed with British fascism, is, I believe, very much based on Unity. One can understand why she wasn't in a great hurry to, bring that all up again.
You've also said that it's not one of the best books that she wrote. Is it an interesting read anyway?
Yes, no, and it has, as all her novels do, fantastic passages of brilliance and wit. It's a great mystery how people's the kind of career of people's talent, and when it comes into flower and when it doesn't, or when it withers. And as I say, my feeling is that with her, it was post-war, when she sat down to write The Pursuit of Love, something happened. And I don't just mean that she found her subject. I think she also found her voice. And I think the wit of The Pursuit of Love and Love in a Cold Climate is of a markedly different sort.
She also wrote nonfiction, essays, four biographies of Madame de Pompadour, Louis XIV, Voltaire, Frederick the Great. Did she have an interesting voice for those as well?
Yes, they're very particular, and they're very filled with Nancy's personality, those biographies.
So they could be witty and laugh out loud at times as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think so. She's also, perhaps what she's most famous for in England, for good or ill, is an essay she wrote about you and non-you manners of speech. Endless distinctions between whether one says serviette or napkin or looking glass or mirror and so on. That, again, I think has a lot to do with her reputation, certainly in Britain.
Because it opened up a lot of discussions about class.
Right. And she was she liked to provoke. And as I think is the case with all the Mitford girls, it's a Mitford tray, the desire to tease. The Mitford tease is a kind of crucial motif in their letters, and certainly in Nancy's novels. Give them a sort of earnest sentiment, the impulse will be to mock it or subvert it, which is another reason why people find the novels hard sometimes, because they don't think there's enough, taking serious things seriously.
It's interesting that one of the sisters, Jessica, the communist, wound up living most of her life in the United States.
Yes.
And wrote a classic of American nonfiction, The American Way of Death.
Yes. And I can't remember quite how her relations with Nancy turned out. Well, no, they all reunited at Nancy's deathbed. Nancy had, I feel a little inhibited saying all this with Devo still in the building, because she is obviously the expert on these things. I think my understanding is that Nancy had a rather tragic life in some ways. The great love of her life was a French colonel called Paluski, who ended up marrying somebody else. And shortly thereafter, she got cancer and died quite young. And I think her relations with her sisters, for some of the reasons we've been talking about, were all a bit strained, but they did all come and sit with her at her deathbed.
They lost their brother in the war.
Mm.
My great thanks to you for coming by. Are you working on another novel?
I am indeed.
I can't wait.
Aw, thank you, Leonard.
Zoe Heller has written the introduction to a reissue of Nancy Mitford's The Pursuit of Love, one of her two classic books. I think Jane Austen, to some degree as well, has often been put down for all the wrong reasons, and I think that we might say the same is true for Nancy Mitford.
Yes, I think Nancy is more provoking because although Jane Austen never gets around to discussing the French Revolution or the slave trade, she does take the love lives and moral adventures of her heroines very seriously. Nancy is a little bit cheekier.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.